So we're going to be looking at this passage today. We're going to be talking about having access to God. And, you know, I don't know how, if you're like me, but I sometimes when people say, I'm going to talk about prayer, you sort of click because you're thinking, yeah, he's going to tell me I got to pray more. I already know that. I have to pray more. I have to read my Bible more. Yeah. I'm not going to talk about that. Aren't you glad? Because I've heard enough of those sermons. I'm sure you have too. And some of the questions that we have that make us struggle with prayer don't get answered by just being guilted, right? Pray more, pray more. Never mind you don't enjoy it. Never mind that you don't get anything out of it. Never mind that when you get done praying, you just feel just as bad as when you started praying. Just keep doing it. And that's not the message of the Scriptures. The message of the Scriptures is first to go back and ask ourselves, how is it actually that I get to come to God in the first place? Like, really, how do I get to come to God in the first place? Many of us, when we have sinned, we have done something that we feel bad about, we don't want to come to God. You remember Adam and Eve in the garden, when they sinned, what did they do? They hid. Our tendency is to hide. I'm not going to ask you how many of you have sinned this week and wanted to hide from God, but I'll bet you there'd be a lot of hands going up. And what's so amazing about, I never, ever get tired of hearing and understanding more deeply how prayer is not me finding God, but it's God finding me. In the garden, God went and found Adam and Eve. They didn't go looking for him because, hey, guys, where are you? God does that with us too. God does that with us too. If you're here today and you say, man, I've blown it this week, you know why you're here? Because God is looking for you. God is calling you to himself. He loves you more than you could ever imagine. And this passage is going to lead us into understanding more deeply how that is true. So let's just look at it together. I'll read it, but let's all think about what it's saying. Since then, we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God. Let us hold fast our confession. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. Let us then, with confidence, draw near to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need. Now, the whole backdrop of this passage is talking about a place called the Holy of Holies. And I don't know, I'll show you a picture here in a minute of the Holy of Holies, but it was a place in Israel's tabernacle of worship that was so holy, God's presence was so near, that only one person got to go in there once a year and only under certain conditions. Kind of like God's living room, if you will. If you wanted to be close to God, the Holy of Holies was a place you needed to go. But you weren't welcome there in the Old Testament. And the reason why was because only perfectly holy beings can be in that place. This is not exactly my living room growing up. Actually, my dad wasn't a white-collar guy. He was a blue-collar guy. But I put this up because this is a picture of what kind of like what my living room was like when I was a kid. So when we came home, we could flip on the TV. It was black and white back in my day, believe it or not, beginning when I was young. Yeah, I know. And you could lay on the floor. You could lay on the couch. You could put your feet up on anything you wanted to. You could bring drinks and food into the living room. I used to have Cheetos, and they would like crumble all over the couch, and Mom didn't care. Kids were home, happy, happy, happy. We were all just together. In my living room growing up, you could rest, and you could be you, and you were welcome. Don't you wish you could do that in God's presence? Don't you wish you could feel that way in God's presence? Hey, Father, lay down, watch your favorite TV show. However, one summer, I got invited to my Uncle George's and Aunt Pat's house. Those people had money. We didn't ever have money, never had money, but they had money. And this isn't exactly the living room, but this is how it looked. It was like white decor, perfect everything, and there were rules, baby, and you didn't break them. You do not put your feet up on the couch. You do not walk in with your shoes on. You do not turn on the TV. There was no TV in the living room. We don't do stuff like that in the living room. In the living room at Aunt Pat's house, you sat with your knees together and acted polite. And if you didn't act polite, you weren't welcome. Okay? So here comes this guy, you know, and I'm at Aunt Pat's house. And as soon as I flung open the door and saw that, I was like, and I couldn't rest in a place like that. Could not. Maybe some of you grew up that way and you're kind of used to it. Not me. Oh, man. I couldn't wait to get out of there and go to my bedroom because there was a TV in there. And I could lay in the bed and turn on TV. My uncle, see, my dad used to smoke. And smoking's not a good thing. But in those days, every dad smoked in the living room. My uncle, when he wanted to smoke, my aunt kicked him out of the house. He had to go outside and smoke, which I think is a good idea. But still, that's kind of the feeling, right? I did not feel rest in this place. So I want to ask you now, if you came to God's living room, what do you think that would be like? What is God's presence like for you? The closeness, the intimacy. Do you really and honestly, truly, do you feel welcome there? As sinful as you and I are, after making our mistakes and our sins, do you feel welcome in God's presence? Or are you kind of afraid of God? Are you discouraged with your faith? I've been walking with God for a long time. My parents have told me about Jesus. I got baptized. I accepted Jesus, but I'm just having a hard time. I struggle. Do you ever just feel judged all the time? No matter what I do, I'm not good enough. How would you feel going into God's living room today? Well, the analogy I just made is not a perfect one. Because in a way, God's living room is very much, in one sense, like my Aunt Pat's living room. It was a very perfect place. And there were rules. And you could only go in there under certain conditions. And this is the tabernacle. When the Jews were wandering through the desert, they would set up this tent. Where's my... Well, my laser isn't working. Oh, well. Anyway, they would set up this tent, and then they would set up the tent of meeting. And then inside the tent of meeting in the back is this place called the Holy of Holies. And that was God's living room. That's where God's presence was immediately felt. And here are the rules. You could only go in there once a year on something called the Day of Atonement, or the Jewish Yom Kippur. Only the high priest could go in, not just anybody. No one else could go in there. It was once a year on that day. And when the priest went in, the first thing he had to do was recognize that he didn't belong there either. So he had to make a sacrifice for his own sins before he could do any of God's work for anyone else. Then he would sacrifice for the people. And it had to be perfectly done. In Leviticus chapter 16, which I'm going to show you some verses, it goes all through those rules. And we don't have time to talk about them in great detail, but I'm just going to give you some highlights. Okay, verse 1 in Leviticus 16, it says, the Lord spoke to Moses after the death of the two sons of Aaron when they drew near before the Lord and died. Okay, that's how the passage starts. Welcome to God's living room. Two guys, Aaron's sons, they got drunk. And they brought a wrong kind of sacrifice before God. They were flip about it. And the presence of the Lord struck them dead. Welcome home. And then God says, now I'm going to tell you how to do this thing, and you need to do it right so that you may not die. This was the instruction to Aaron, the high priest. Okay, this isn't feeling good, I know, guys. And then you had to bring in a sacrifice, but before you even went in, you had to make sure you were wearing the holy garments. Like, I wouldn't go into my Aunt Pat's house wearing a dirty t-shirt and my dirty jeans. You had to have certain clothes on so you wouldn't get the the couch dirty and everything. Well, even more so, to go into God's presence, you had to wear the holy garments. And you had to take a bath. Aaron had to bathe himself. So there were all kinds of rules. And he made a sin offering for himself and for his house first. And then he made a sacrifice for the people. And this is an important detail. He had to take the blood from that sacrifice, and in the Holy of Holies, he sprinkled it on something called the mercy seat. So this was the Ark of the Covenant. If you know what that is, they used to carry it. The Israel used to carry it. It was the presence of God among them. When they put it in the Holy of Holies, and he would take blood, and seven times he would sprinkle blood on the mercy seat, which is between the cherubim on the altar. And the reason for that was that he was sacrificing for the people all their sins. Wow. So, and not only that, but this one day was so holy that you could not be in the tent of meeting at all. Nobody was welcome in here at all. Not even just the Holy of Holies, but the whole, you couldn't even get near. I mean, it would be like Aunt Pat saying, hey, you not only can't be in my living room, you can't even be in the driveway. Okay. And you're saying, wait a minute, I thought this was going to be a good sermon. We'll get there. But this is because God is mean. No. This is because God's a snob. No. This is because God despises us. Secretly, God despises all of us, doesn't he? No. No. It's because of God's nature. He's holy. He's holy. There's two kinds of matter in the universe, matter and antimatter. When you put matter and antimatter together, it explodes and becomes energy, and it's annihilated. Because God is so holy, if we came in before him as ourselves with our sin, we would die. And that was the point. God is not trying to make people feel unwelcome. He's trying to help them understand how holy he is. And the fact that we understand how holy he is helps us to be so grateful when we get to the good news about what Jesus did for us. Because when we get to that, you're going to be like, oh man, this is awesome. But you can't feel that way if you don't understand first how holy God is. And don't ever forget, holiness is wholeness. Holiness is completeness. Holiness is not meant to be some unobtainable standard of boringness and, you know, like I don't turn on my TV, I don't play cards, I barely do anything but sit around and pray all day. It's not meant to be that. Holiness is the way God originally intended us to live in the garden. Living a whole life, a healthy life, a beautiful life where we enjoy all of God's creation. And sin ruins that. That's what holiness is. So God wants us to share in that life. But we can't just come into God without dealing with sin. And so what does God say to us? Does he say stay away? Let's go back and look at verse 16 in our passage today. What does Jesus say? Therefore, stay away, folks. Don't even go near God's living room. No. The writer says in verse 16, let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need. So what changed from the Old Testament to the New Testament? What changed? And what changed was the work of Jesus and his work as our great high priest. We all know that Jesus died on the cross and took away our sins. We all know that he rose from the dead. But this even gives us a deeper picture of what he did. Because what he did, now I'm giving away my whole punchline, he became the great high priest, like Aaron, who went into the heavenly Holy of Holies, the real one, not just the facsimile, that the earthly one, but he went into the real one, and he offered the sacrifice on the mercy seat, his own precious blood. And then he turned around and he tore the curtain, and he turns to us and says, "Welcome home. Come into God's living room. You are holy in the sight of my Father. My blood has once for all taken away the curse and the sin and the guilt and the embarrassment and the shame and the fear. Come into my living room. Enjoy the presence of my Father, who is now your Father." That's what Jesus did. So we're going to look at five things. We're going to know Jesus' ministry for us. We're going to trust Jesus' compassion for us. There's an emotional part of this. We're going to be exhorted to hold fast to our faith, to draw near to the throne, and to receive his mercy and grace. Now we're in the good news side. You guys can relax. It isn't going to be all bad. So first, let's know Jesus' ministry for us. Now, I already said this, but let's say it again. Since we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, that's verse 14. Let's break that down. Since we have a great high priest, the great is stuck at the front of high priest. I mean, the Jewish nation had high priest after high priest. After Aaron died, there was another high priest, another high priest, another high priest. Jesus is the great one. He's the one who capped it off, who finished it. He's the very last and most important great high priest. He's the one who dealt with the problem once and for all. And he passed through the heavens. What's he talking about? Well, you remember the high priest on the one day of atonement had to pass through the courtyard, and then he had to go through the tabernacle, then he had to go through the tent of meeting, and then he had to do the rituals and go into the Holy of Holies. He had to pass through all these things. When Jesus died, and when he rose from the dead, when he ascended into heaven, he did that for us in the heavenly reality of the holy place of God. All those other things were just pictures for people to understand what Jesus was ultimately going to do. But he did it in the real place. And he's not just any old high priest. He's Jesus, the Son of God. Now, that's the first thing. That's what he did for us. But what about his compassion for us? So, in verse 15, he says, "For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin." So, he's able to sympathize with our weaknesses. One of my best friends in all the world lives in West Virginia. Name is Wade. When I'm bummed out about something, I've lost my temper at work or something, I call him up. And one of the things he always says is, "Dude, I understand. I know where you're coming from." And when we think of going to God, we think of him being angry with us and criticizing us. But Jesus says, "Dude, I was tempted to lose my temper too. I know what you're going through. Or Lord, I'm being tempted by this situation. My friend, I was tempted in the same way. I get it. I know how you feel." So here we have someone that when we go into the presence of God, he knows what we're going through and he doesn't condemn us. Do you think of God that way? I don't know, maybe some of you have parents that are very strict, and every time you make a mistake, they put their thumb on it, right? And so you tend to think of God that way. And while God does convict us of our sin and tell us to repent and to turn from our sin, this isn't saying you can just go on doing whatever you want, but there's that nature and that side of God that he's not about rubbing it in. He's about cleaning it out. That's what God's all about in your life. So we can go to him because he understands. And then it says, yet without sin. And this is where some people stumble and they say, well, yeah, but he never sinned. He doesn't really understand. But think of it this way. The reason the writer says this, because he's saying Jesus was tempted, but he knew how to overcome. So he can show us how to overcome. So I remember a few years ago, I saw this article, and it was an interview with Elizabeth Taylor, the famous actress, if you know who that is. And the name of the article was What I Have Learned About Marriage. Elizabeth Taylor was married 9 times. I don't want to learn about marriage from Elizabeth Taylor, okay? I don't want to learn from her. She's an utter and abject failure at marriage. I mean, she's a great actress and everything, but I don't want to learn from somebody like that. I want to learn from somebody who knew how to hold it together, who knew how to go through the bad times and stay married. Okay? Well, that's what he's saying here. Jesus was perfect. He was the Son of God. He figured it out. And he can help us to do the same. That's what it's saying. So we're going to trust Jesus' compassion for us. This is all through the book of Hebrews. Therefore, he had to be made like his brothers, talking about Jesus, in every respect, so that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest. A merciful, not just faithful, but merciful in the service of God to make propitiation, that's make an offering for the sins of the people. For, I love this passage, for because he himself has suffered when tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted. Oh, man. That's so beautiful. Could Jesus really have compassion for us? You all know this story. I'm not going to read it to you. But, you know, the very first thing that happened after Jesus' baptism was he was led out into the wilderness. And he was tempted. He fasted for 40 days and 40 nights, and then he was tempted. And Satan tempted him in 3 different ways. He tempted him for his appetites. He said, man, you're hungry. Why don't you turn this stone into bread? Does Satan ever tempt you over your desires and appetites, whether they be sexual or greed? Does Satan ever tempt you in your appetites? Of course. Then, when that didn't work, he said, well, okay, I'm just going to give you all the power in the world. All you have to do is worship me. Have you ever been tempted by power? Do you know? Have you ever seen people in the world whose power went to their heads? And then he tempted him to just get glory for himself. Why don't you just throw yourself off the temple, man? When you fly, people are going to be like, look at that guy. How many of you are ever tempted to want to get praise and glory for yourself? Look at me, look at me, look at me. Jesus has been through all that. And he overcame. And it says at the bottom, it's interesting, and when the devil had ended every temptation, he departed from him until an opportune time. That wasn't the end of it. That wasn't the only time he ever got tempted. He got tempted all the time. Don't you think when the Pharisees came to him, and one time they said, well, you're an illegitimate child. That's how come you're this Joseph and Mary thing. No such thing as a virgin birth. She slept with someone else. Don't you think he was tempted to punch them in the mouth? I mean, I would have. I was like, you. Oh, man, don't you talk about my mother that way, you know? But he fought that temptation. I mean, he's the Son of God. He could have turned his finger into a laser. You know, your mom was a whore. Oh, yeah? Now you're a pile of dirt. I mean, I would have been so... I had all the power in the world, and he faced all those temptations, and he overcame. And then when he found out, he knew that Simon Peter was going to betray him, not betray him, but was going to deny him, rather, sorry. He says to Peter, Simon, Simon, behold, Satan demanded to have you that he might sift you like wheat. And because you're going to do that, I'm sick of you and I've had enough of you. Get away from me. No, he doesn't say that. He says, but I have prayed for you that your faith may not fail. And when you have turned again, strengthen your brothers. How many of us have ever been betrayed by a friend, been let down by a friend, disappointed by a friend, if you knew they were going to do that in advance, what would be your response? Would you pray for them? That's Jesus. That's Jesus. And it says that he ever lives in heaven to make intercession for us. Right now, he knows that tomorrow I'm going to disappoint him. He's praying for me today. He knows that tomorrow you're going to do that thing that you promised never to do again. And he's praying for you today that your faith would not fail. That's Jesus. So let us hold fast our confession. So confession is the faith that we confess, the faith that we say we believe. I confess my faith. All right. Don't raise your hands. How many of you have been tempted to just say, forget it, I don't want to be a Christian? Anybody? Any of you ever had doubts? Like, I don't think this is real. I just want to go live my life. And you're looking maybe at the way other people are living and going, they're having more fun than I am. They don't have to deal with all this church stuff. Come on, you know it's true. Some of us. Yep. You know Jesus was tempted that way too? Yep. Do you know Simon Peter was tempted that way? You know, all the disciples ran away and hid after Jesus was murdered. It's common. It's common. And in this passage, the writer is writing to a group of Christians who are wanting to give up. They're wanting to go back to Judaism. Because Judaism was real popular. It was the thing. It was, if you were Jewish, people leave you alone. Just be like everybody else. And they were like, Judaism was good enough, man. We had Moses and we had Aaron. We had the law. And the writer is saying, yeah, you had Moses. You had Aaron. You want to go back to that? You want to go back to the Holy of Holies where if you walked in, you'd be dead? You want to go back to that? Or do you want to stay with Jesus, our confession? And this hold fast, man, that it's a strong word. In Acts 24:6, the same Greek word is used to talk about how Paul was seized by the authorities. They seized him and they tied his hands. It's a very strong, strong, strong word. It's the same word that says, hold fast, hold fast, hold fast. In Hebrews, all through the book of Hebrews, read it again. Hold fast to the hope. We have a sure and steadfast anchor of the soul. Look at this, verse 20, where Jesus has gone as a forerunner on our behalf, having become a high priest forever, after the order of Melchizedek. Hold on. Look what you've got. Don't let go of that. Don't let go of it. And we're getting toward the end. If you're wondering when I was going to ever stop, we are. I don't even think I've done a half hour yet. Not bad, huh? 29 minutes. It's why you get married. It's why I got married. Okay. So then he says, then the next thing is draw near to the throne. There are two things he tells us, hold fast and draw near. Draw near after all that. In the Old Testament, do you think anybody said to the Jews, hey, it's the Day of Atonement, let's all draw near? Of course not. I just got done telling you, if you drew near, you'd be dead. And now the writer is saying, you can draw near. Draw near to what? It used to be called the mercy seat, where he sprinkled the blood, and he changed the name to the throne of grace. How cool. I've turned this fearful thing of the presence of God into a place where when you come, God is sitting there going, I love you. What do you need? Come in. And he offers for all of us to come in. If this had happened on earth, here's what would have happened. Jesus would have said, okay, I'm going into the Holy of Holies. Who wants to go with me? Oh, he can't do that. No, I'm going first. And I'll offer the perfect sacrifice of myself. then I'm going to tear the curtain open and you all can come in. There'll be no barrier between you and the Father anymore, ever. Wow. Wow. Come on into the living room. Turn on God's TV. I mean, some of those shows you guys watch are not going to be on God's TV, okay? But there's still going to be, I believe there's going to be TV in heaven. I've got to believe that. Maybe maybe not cell phone. You think there'll be cell phones in heaven? I hope not. Right? Maybe we'll automatically know stuff, right? We won't need our phone, right? Like when people want to text us, they'll just think something. We'll go, oh, yeah. They'll like be in our heads, like cell heads or something. I don't know how it's going to work. But anyway, now we are welcome in. And so he says, finally, receive his mercy and grace. To receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need. The mercy seat has become the throne of grace. And think about this. Mercy, generally speaking, is for stuff you've already done. You ever have somebody come to you and say, why did you say that? And you're like, oh, I'm sorry. Please forgive me. That's mercy. Mercy, mercy, have mercy. I'm sorry. God says, I'm offering mercy. You need it? Come on. Draw near. Don't listen to your feelings that say, it must be different for my case. I heard what the guy said this morning, but it must be different for my case. There's no difference for your case if you believe in Jesus. Go near and ask for mercy, and he's giving it out. Grace is for now and the future. Lord, I've got this temptation in my life. Lord, I'm angry at someone. Lord, I need help to get this thing done. I can't do it on my own. That's what grace is. God never expected you to be able to live the Christian life by yourself. We live in his living room, and that's where he makes us able as we rest in him to live out the Christian life. So today, I welcome all of us who know Jesus Christ to come rest in God's living room, to know his ministry for us, to know his attitude toward us, that it is compassion, to hold fast to your faith. Don't give up, guys. You've got what everybody's looking for and what everybody needs. To draw near, not run away, but draw near, and to receive his mercy and grace. And in a moment, we're going to have a song, and then after that, we're going to come to the Lord's table, and we'll talk more about that. But the Lord's table is a perfect picture of coming to the throne of grace. We come through his body and through his blood, and all of us who know Jesus Christ are welcome to come as his children. So can I ask you guys to come up and lead us in this third song? Is it both of you or just Linda? Okay.